Hello, I'm Stephanie Gillard, the Producing Artistic Director at American Stage. Welcome to Spotlight, the American Stage podcast, where we illuminate the artistry and ideas behind the stories.
Hey there, I'm Sadie Lockhart, the Emerging Arts Leader Fellow here at American Stage. Today's episode will take an in-depth look at the upcoming 1920 An American Dreamscape season at American Stage. Today we sit down with Producing Artistic Director Stephanie Gillard as she gives us some insider information about how she selected this season. Thank you so much for sitting down and talking with us today.
Thank you, Sadie.
How do you begin your approach to curating a full season?
You know, it doesn't really have a beginning because that's reading plays and researching plays and kind of being aware of what's out there, what's developing, what's new, what's being revived. That's kind of an ongoing process all the time. It's kind of my job to be aware of and stay tuned in as best I can. There does become a period of the process where it becomes particularly focused, where it becomes more about, okay, how many plays do I need to read this week and which scripts do I still need to order and make sure I have? That process feels like it's year-round also, but that process is probably about probably starts about 6 months before I actually announce the season.
Wow. So you've been a producing artistic director and selecting seasons for how many years?
About 15 years or so.
Yeah. Does it get any easier as you go through each year?
You would think it would. It should. It doesn't. It really doesn't. And I want to say that it actually gets harder, I think, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that's just me and my approach to the work, or if it's kind of, it feels like it maybe have more to do with what's going on in our country right now, and it's an interesting time to be alive and be trying to produce art and provide opportunities for dialogue when there is so much rancor and so much kind of siloed perspectives, and that kind of heightens the stakes, I think, of selecting seasons, and maybe that's the part that's really making it more difficult, really wanting to be mindful of what kind of conversations we're helping to promote, and also feels that things kind of change so fast now, faster and faster all the time. So I choose seasons, I select plays often more than a year in advance of us actually producing them. And so with things changing and evolving so quickly, that's also a little risky when you're doing plays that are topical, for example. Things could, you know, by one moment you pick a play and a few months later, it may feel somehow, it may resonate very differently than you intended originally.
Yeah. And this is your fourth time selecting a season at American Stage.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, the 1920 season is, this is my fifth year and will be the fourth season that I've selected.
And each year that you've been here, you've come up with a really interesting and innovative theme for the season.
Thank you.
What is your thought process behind creating a theme for the curation of the entire selection of the plays?
I started doing that a few years before I came to American Stage, so I didn't always create a season theme, and I think it came out of, maybe this is kind of part of a developing awareness of kind of, as I was saying earlier, kind of the stakes of what it is to put out a body of work and get behind a full season of work. It really is about so much more than selecting six or seven plays. Finding six or seven plays that I love and that I think are really compelling, that would be easy. But finding only six or seven kind of makes the way in which the pieces play off of one another, the landscape that they kind of cover, it makes that part of it more complicated and more important when you look at it that way. So I'm always kind of thinking about not just the individual plays and who's going to love this play, but also for those who are going to come and experience the entire season with us, what's that journey going to be like? And I have found that while the plays range dramatically in theme and in style, that kind of having a frame to put around a whole season, even a broad theme, kind of helps to maybe create a platform for conversation. And that's been helpful to me in shaping seasons. And I think it's also kind of brought our audience into that part of the thought behind curation of the art itself in a way that's more, feels more collaborative.
So what are some of the key elements that you are keeping in mind when you're selecting this overarching theme?
Well, I'm certainly kind of thinking about what the overall mood of society feels like at the moment, but also with an eye to that's an evolving thing. And so trying to kind of put it into a greater perspective or look at it through a lens that feels a little bit timeless, but at the same time has an immediacy to it. And that's so, so vague, and which is kind of what the process is. There's not a magic formula. But I want to both highlight what our art form can do in its kind of providing us access to an engagement with what we're all kind of going through as a society. And it doesn't mean that we're all experiencing each thing that we present in our stories, but to kind of put us in it together. And so by, again, creating this kind of season theme, I think that that's one of the things I'm hoping to do with that. And the actual theme itself, oftentimes it's something that you could say that almost anything would apply to this theme, but it gets us thinking about it, you know, in a particular way. And lately, my themes have very much been about kind of examining what the American experience specifically is. And, you know, maybe in the future it'll open up a little bit more globally, and there's certainly some important conversations and some fantastic plays and stories to tell, but it feels like at this moment in time, us reexamining ourselves is something that our art form can offer that's particularly of this moment significant.
Yeah. And speaking of the American experience, this season's upcoming theme is American Dreamscape.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about that and what you're excited for the entire journey for us to go on of next season?
So so many American plays, you could kind of ultimately distill down to it being about the American dream in some way, in some fashion, kind of like James Cameron said about all movies are love stories. In some ways, all stories have in some way deal with the American dream because it's, you know, what are we trying to it's always characters striving towards something and struggling against something. And so you can put that lens on many, many stories. But as I was thinking about where things are right now and the idea that the American dream is very much still alive, but it feels a little surreal right now, maybe a little bit distorted. And I think I started thinking about this season in kind of images. And not just plays, and thinking about, you know, paintings and works that feel like a beautiful but sometimes slightly disturbing version of reality, but still a recognizable reality, and somehow with beauty in it and with hope in it. And I that's what led me to an American Dreamscape. So our plays are this season all in some fashion or another about the American experience and the pursuit of the American dream. But the scape part, the dreamscape, is the part where it gets a little bit, you know, there's a surreal kind of quality to it. And I think that our productions allow us to explore that in really exciting theatrical ways throughout the season.
Awesome. Well, let's jump right in.
Yeah.
So first up in the season is Quy Nguyen's Viet Gone, which is being said to be a punch-drunk mashup of hip-hop, road movies, sex farce, and Vietnamese-American history. Oh, also kick-ass fights, says Time Out New York.
Yes.
So what are you most excited for about bringing this piece to American stage?
All of that. All of those things. It's, you know, one of the things I think about when I think about the what is it, what feels American is certainly diversity and also this kind of rambunctious spirit And so this play captures, it's so unique, and it captures this what I think makes America exciting and interesting, and it does it in a way that's really theatrical. So it honors our art form, but it also breaks some of the rules of our art form, because it kind of brings, you know, kind of a almost a video game energy. And it's got, you know, you have Vietnamese characters who are rapping, and you've got this kind of juxtaposition of Vietnam era characters, but who are kind of speaking in a way that feels very kind of contemporary. Ultimately, it's this really great love story, though. And I, you know, I'm a sucker for a good love story, and particularly when it comes to us in an unexpected way. And so I have wanted to produce this play for a couple of years, and it just seemed, the time really seemed right for this. And of course, opening the season with it, because it's such a, it's so much fun and has so much energy to it. But it also is like all the things that we, pretty much all the programs that we do here, is really smart and thoughtful, and you can experience it just for its kind of on a surface level as being great entertainment, but you'd be missing out on a great kind of further kind of investigation of some of the things that it's exploring about what it is to come to America, being from another country, and what it is to honor the history of your own culture, and what it is to look back at, you know, specifically the Vietnam War with, you know, a youthful lens, and with the, through the lens of somebody who actually lived it. So it's a play that is exciting for multiple demographics. I mean, looking forward to people of all ages and backgrounds to experience this play and get something out of it.
Yeah. And the playwright, Quy Nguyen, is actually telling the story of his parents.
Yes. It's really funny what he's done, because he, at the very beginning of the play, establishes right out the gate that he's telling this story, and he's, you know, he kind of says this is a completely made up story, and of course it's not, but it's a very heightened, exaggerated version of his parents meeting in America and falling in love. And he's taken all sorts of liberties with what that must have been like. And that, of course, makes it almost like an action hero / love story mashup that's really fun. But at the heart of it is the story of his mom and dad meeting and falling in love. And it's how he, the playwright, came to be.
Yeah. And there are also a lot of production elements that are going to be coming together for this. So what are some of maybe new and exciting ways that we'll be using our stage for this production?
We're, you know, in the design process now, so there's still a lot of ideating around how we're going to tell this story on our stage, which is always kind of one of the cool things about doing pieces that stretch us. You know, allows us to be creative and do things and be innovative. How can we use our space to serve this story? But it's, you know, as your quote said, there's a really cool big fight in the middle of it. It's kind of got a road trip kind of quality. So how we're going to kind of convey that on our stage is something that I won't reveal too much, but it's going to be a fun journey for our audiences. There are music elements to the piece. There's some projection. And it's like I said, it's unique, and it brings a mashup of a lot of different production elements. So it's going to be a challenge for us. We'll have a fight choreographer, an intimacy director, a cultural consultant, all sorts of people on the creative team, helping us to bring this to fruition.
Ooh, sounds like a party.
Yeah. So yes. Excited. Everybody needs to come be a part of it. And it always kind of makes us richer when we're able to bring in new expertise and new perspectives into our process. So that's going to be part of it. I'm really looking forward to working with Brian Balcom, our director, for the first time. And that will be enriched by the perspective and work that he brings to us as well.
How exciting.
Yeah.
For the second slot of the season, we have a familiar playwright, Lauren Gunderson, coming back to our stage. I so enjoyed working with her text and her rich dialogue in Miss Bennett,
yes,
which was at Pemberley's
yes.
last season.
You are our Jane. Yes. she's a tremendously prolific playwright who's also one of the most produced playwrights in the country right now. And so I'm kind of, you know, always excited when to read her work and excited to bring her work back to our stage. She does something that's I love, which is she takes historical characters and historical stories, and she honors those time periods, but she through her dialogue, she allows the characters to feel so immediate and relatable, so they don't feel like these kind of museum piece kind of characters. And she did that with Miss Bennett's all the characters in Miss Bennett Christmas at Pemberley, and she very much does that in Silent Sky. So it makes it a really it's a really great way to get kind of some history, but you don't feel like you're getting a history lesson because these characters are so fun and smart, and the dialogue is snappy and fresh.
Yeah, and Silent Sky feels like such an expansive story.
Yeah,
it's very, for me, it was very inspiring when I read it, and it feels like the themes are applicable beyond just the historical context of Henrietta's story.
I think expansive is actually a really good word for this play, because it's, well, first of all, it's about the whole universe and in terms of the study of astronomy, but expansive too in terms of women's role in society, and expansive in terms of what it is to dream, and relatable to, you know, what it is to try and balance things in your life, your passions and you know, your love of family, but also your love of, you know, if you have a passion for your career and you want to have, you know, if you fall in love, and all of those things that we all, you know, kind of contend with in our lives, of how to have it, how do you have it all and keep it in balance, and what if you know, if something really is pulling you in a particular direction, but that direction is taking you away from some of the other things you love.
Yeah, and it comes at a really great time in U.S. history as well. It's almost like you planned this with the anniversary of women's suffrage.
So, you know, I mean, I'm always thinking about how the female experience of the world, not exclusively, but that's, you know, I'm a woman, so in that colors all of the programming choices that I make. So I don't want to say that this play was chosen just because it's the anniversary of the women's suffrage movement, but I do think that Lauren Gunderson is a great playwright to feature, and that this story is a great story to tell right now, in particular, as we, you know, really some of the things that we may start taking for granted. It's so easy to start taking for granted where women are now and what we've achieved and what we've accomplished. It wasn't all that long ago when it was a big deal for a woman to be studying physics and astronomy and to be really making an impact in the sciences and many other fields. So this story reminds us of that not so very long ago, that was not an easy path for a woman to venture down, and that it's important that we value that, and we take care of that, and we protect that, and make sure that we continue to make progress. And Henrietta is such a great modern heroine, because she's really relatable, and she, the way that Lauren has interpreted her through the telling of her story, you know, you feel like this is somebody I know, or this is me, or this is a part of me anyway. And then, you know, she has this beautiful relationship with her sister and the other women she works with. And then she meets a gentleman, and that relationship becomes really interesting. It's just, it just feels like, it takes a time period that is now what, over 100 years ago, which really isn't all that much time, right? But it feels like this could be almost right now.
Yeah, and Henrietta's spunk and drive and tenacity feels like any woman today.
Yes,
pursuing and moving forward in this world.
Yeah, spunk's a great word. And then there's the I'm going to use the word theatricality again, because the play provides us an opportunity to span through many, many years of time, and has some just gorgeous kind of moments from a production standpoint, production value standpoint, that I'm really excited to explore in our space, that allow people to kind of feel the inspiration that having a dream and having a passion can fill you with.
Yeah. Getting ready to take on the whole universe.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And Kristen Clifford, the director of Silent Sky, who directed The Roommate last season, will be back with us this year. And she's just a terrific collaborator and happens to also know Lauren, the playwright. And I know she's going to really helm this production with a great authority and compassion and a bold spirit, which I love about the way she approaches work. And so she's going to really take this story and deliver it to our audiences in a way that's going to be really exciting.
So moving into the next slot for this season, Dominique Morisot, who wrote Pipeline that we produced last year, is coming back to our stage, but this time with Skeleton Crew. Mm-hmm. And this play is said to be a deeply moral and deeply American play with a loving compassion for those trapped in a system that makes sins spiritual or societal and self-betrayal almost inevitable, says the New York Times.
Hmm.
So how does that fit in with your vision of the play fitting into our season?
Yeah, well, Dominique Morisot is, I'm fascinated by her, her perspective and her characters and the way she crafts relationships and character around these really, really big ideas. And she does it in a way that just humanizes, takes a really big idea that almost seems kind of like, how do you even begin to tell a story about that? But she creates these characters that make the world so recognizable and just provides a really, I think deeply moral is a really great way to describe it, because it her work gives voice to the complexity of the human experience and the American experience, and in this case of the experience of folks who are working in the auto industry at the beginning of the Great Recession, and kind of all of the things that happen around that, about the position that each of the characters are put into, kind of highlights what we all kind of recognize as being, again, what do human beings do when you have responsibility to one another, but you also have to look out for yourself? And what happens when people are put in a position where the ground underneath them is kind of, quickly moving and shifting? She does it in a way that we also kind of, even though these situations are so intense and potentially tragic, because her characters speak in a way that is so human, there's a ton of humor and a ton of heart in it. And you just want to listen to her characters speak, and you get so drawn into their worlds and feel compassion for them, which I think is essential in good storytelling, that you really feel for the characters.
Yeah. Her pieces seem to create a lot of empathy,
mm-hmm.
and I find understanding to who they are and their background story. And I feel like I want to like hang out with them after the show. I want to like go for coffee with them.
I think part of that is because she creates these characters who feel very real, and she does it without judgment. And I think that's a great way into kind of talking about these bigger topics. And there's so much, we become so comfortable immediately kind of taking a stand on things and judging sides or perspectives that are different from our own. And that doesn't really lead to fruitful consideration of things that really are complicated and deserving of a little more nuance and understanding and empathy. And the way she writes her characters, it provides us an opportunity to go down these paths in a way that is more compassionate and is more, I think, I don't know, holistic, because we're not necessarily positioned to judge. And so as we look at a period of time when, you know, our economy is falling apart, and looking at corporate America and the blue collar worker, that pressure and those tensions between those two existences are looked at without judgment. It's not, oh, corporate America bad, or blue collar workers, it's their own fault. You know, there's blame there. It looks at it really just honestly. And that's, to me, kind of that tension, corporate America, blue-collar worker, our economy, where's money coming from, capitalism, you know, is it working, is it not working? That's kind of the heart of the American experience. And so that had to go into the American Dreamscape season.
Yeah, that's so exciting. We had a lot of audience members really connect with Pipeline,
mm-hmm.
and the story that she crafted there. So how does Skeleton Crew differ from Pipeline? Like, what can we expect?
I think that it's because it doesn't have the here's what's similar and different. The familial component. So in Pipeline, we had mother, son, and then kind of estranged father. And so it was so, so personal from that maternal and that parental kind of just angst around, you know, what society offering to your child. In this case, the characters are colleagues and coworkers. They're not related to each other, but they have created their own kind of family within their environment. And so I think it speaks to Dominique's kind of real, I don't know, enchantment may not be the right word, but insights into the human desire to connect and create a sense of family and community. But then also the things that inside of that pull us apart or want to kind of pull us apart. And that's where good storytelling is in the conflicts of the things that want to pull us apart. So Skeleton Crew feels, you know, it's a little more of the kind of grown-up workplace experience as opposed to inside the home. But the feeling of family and of our commitment and responsibility to one another is consistent.
Yeah. Also similar is the director.
That's right. So L. Peter Callender, who has become a favorite of our audiences now, both as a director and as a performer. He appeared on stage in Between Riverside and Crazy. But he's been directing for us for, I believe this will be his fourth year, fourth or fifth year. And he's just terrific and really is a great storyteller and gets so much out of his performers. And our audiences always feel like they just have been really brought into the emotional journey of the characters and the works that Peter directs with us.
Next up in the season is Natalie Simon's The People Downstairs, which was actually developed through our Playwright in Residence program.
That's right. So it'll be a world premiere here. Very exciting. And Natalie also happens to be a playwright who is local to us here in St. Petersburg. We're really fortunate to have her right here and to have worked with her over the last year on the development of The People Downstairs.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about the development process?
Yeah. So with, play development can take a lot of different forms, and a lot of it is dependent upon the playwright's own process. And we're really committed at American Stage to providing opportunities for new works to be developed, because we really need playwrights to continue creating stories for us to tell. And plays don't just kind of pop out of a computer and, you know, ready and in full form to be produced on stage. It's theater by its nature is a really collaborative process. So having some opportunities for a play to be read and even kind of small intimate readings or performances that are not at, you know, kind of fully produced. So with Natalie, we started off in a room with the cast and maybe three or four other people. So it was a very small group of us sitting around a table. And from the beginning, as soon as the piece was read out loud, I knew there was something really special there. And oftentimes the first draft, you can kind of come at it and say, okay, there's some good ideas in here. I really like this character, this moment. But there's a lot of development or a lot of questions about what the play's doing. And this play was certainly, you know, there were a lot of questions that came up, and things have certainly evolved from that first draft. But I will say that from the beginning, Natalie's grasp of who these characters are that she wanted to present in this story was really strong. And her sense of humor is just incredible. She is such a funny writer. And her story is really, you know, super heartfelt. It's like these characters are you ache for them and you love them. But they're also just really funny. And so her dialogue, at some point in the process, we almost kind of had to say, are there too many funny lines here? Cause we want to make sure that we're landing the heart stuff too. So over the course of a year, you know, from that one initial kind of quiet table read, Natalie would make revisions, new drafts, and then a little bit of a bigger circle of people to listen in, and then a couple of kind of invited small audiences, including in January, we presented it as part of our 21st Century New Voices Festival. So she had a nice size audience for there, and it was received with it had a wonderful reception. People really responded to it. And so in between each of those, you know, Natalie is there. She takes notes. She gets feedback from the director. We're really lucky that Chris Crawford, who will be directing it next season, has been a part of the development process as well. That's a really great thing for a playwright to have. So between each of us, you know, kind of having conversations after each read, you know, just the little tweaks that happen along the way. The play is in such great shape. It's, you know, you could say the development process will continue in rehearsals. It will. But we were just holding auditions the other day, and I was thinking, gosh, this script is just so strong. So I'm really excited to that we get to produce the world premiere of Natalie's play.
Yeah. What is most interesting or most intriguing for you about the story that she weaves together of these really complex characters?
I think it's that the characters themselves are the kinds of characters who don't usually, they're more of in the background. They're not usually your foreground characters. They're the people who kind of get overlooked in society, and she's put the spotlight on them and allowed us to like really lean into who they are, and they're quirky and funny and smart and just kind of wonderful, and it makes you feel and you just feel so much in watching their journey. It's and I love this as it relates to the American Dreamscape, because all the people out there who maybe are living their lives somewhat in the shadows, who, you know, don't get a lot of attention. You know, they're not special, or maybe they're a little bit quirky, or, you know, there's something about them that they get overlooked. And this story gives us those characters and shows us just how full of life and how much love and quirkiness, and I mean, keep using that word because she just writes quirky so well, is in there. And it's very kind of satisfying. And I think it also is an opportunity for everyone to feel a little bit more kind of seen. Mm. I think, you know, a lot of people maybe go through life feeling like with all the focus on kind of celebrity or being super, you know, special in some way, that, you know, becoming a YouTube star, or all of our focus on that kind of attention. It's easy to feel like you're not as relevant, or, you know, you're just not as, you could be invisible and people wouldn't notice. And this makes you feel I think it just makes you feel good that because she's given so much respect to these people, and they go through, you know, don't get me wrong, there's conflict and there's arguing and there's flaws, and but ultimately there's tremendous love and desire to really have to live life fully.
Yeah, it's a really touching story, and I'm so excited for people to experience this beyond the reading.
Mm-hmm. So I am too.
I'm glad that her play is being produced. That's so awesome.
And of course, she'll be around throughout the process. So we're looking forward to audiences getting a chance to, and the actors getting a chance to work, you know, with the playwright, have conversations with the playwright, which is not always something that we get to do in our process. So.
Yeah, that's such a unique experience. That's going to be very exciting. Coming to our stage in May is Admissions by Joshua Harmon. Mm-hmm. And Joshua Harmon's comedy Bad Jews was on our stage a few seasons ago.
Yeah. About a year and a half ago. It was a huge hit, very different story. Admissions is, it really brings Joshua Harmon's very particular kind of dark humor, and really challenges, and kind of he writes in a way that kind of makes you squirm in your seat a little bit, but really glad to be squirming in your seat, because it's so both funny and smart, and pokes at some things that it's kind of on our minds anyway. And he just talks about it, puts it right out there.
And when you announced the season in March, there was some other news happening in the world about Admissions. So
yeah.
What
is that? Yeah, it was interesting timing. And of course, you know, my titles get selected long before I actually announce them, or at least, you know, quite a bit before. So I had no way of knowing that the week that we announced would also be the week that the college admissions scandal would play out. And this the play is not specifically about the same kind of scandal that the real life news story that's still playing out is about. But nonetheless, there is a connection in terms of kind of the what the kind of desperation or the lengths that parents will go to get their child into a good school, and how that can kind of maybe sometimes turn people into something that is not who we thought they were.
Yeah. What is most provocative about this piece for you?
I love that it, don't turn this off, because it's liberals will enjoy this as well as anybody. But it really takes liberalism and challenges the sometimes hypocrisy of liberalism, and it's something that in theater a lot of plays are written from the liberal perspective. It's just the nature of our work. And I think people who are drawn to the arts tend to be of a particular political perspective. And, our job is not to promote a particular perspective. And I'm never interested in trying to get people to think a certain way or buy into a certain philosophy other than just to be a good human being in terms of, being accountable for what you contribute to society and being good to others. But beyond that, our job is to, hold the mirror up and look at things, look at the human experience and human behavior as honestly as possible. And sometimes with great humor, and sometimes with great drama. But rarely do you see people who truly believe hold kind of liberal values be challenged for how authentic they are in those values on stage, and he does that, and he does it in a way, and that's the kind of squirming part that isn't protesting those values. It's not suggesting that those values are not highly worthy, but challenges the fallibility of the human beings.
Yeah, all while making you laugh really hard.
Really hard. And gasping a little bit, too. Like, I can't believe they just said that. But it's, I think it's an important conversation, too. I mean, it's about a family. And it's about, parents who really love their son and want their son to go to a good school. And another family who also want their son to go to a good school. And who mean well. People who mean really, really well. And their meaning well sometimes is not actually, does not ultimately have the most altruistic kind of results. But yeah, it's very funny, and it makes us kind of, I think it challenges us to maybe think a little bit more about, where our priorities are, and like you said, laugh a lot along the way.
Yeah. And this is a co-production.
Yeah.
With Capital Stage.
Yeah. So Capital Stage, I was the founding producing artistic director of Capital Stage out in California, Sacramento, California. And it's a great, this will be our second co-production with them. And co-productions are really cool because it's a good infusion of new creative energy and when you collaborate with another company. It's also a great opportunity for us to give the artists involved, the cast in particular, they're going to have an extended contract because they get to perform on both coasts. And that's more work for them, more exposure for them. But it's also a great way to kind of integrate artists from both sides of the country. And so I'm looking forward to that. And this time the production will start out in California first, and then we'll come here and rehearse on our stage for a short period of time. And then we'll present it to our Tampa Bay audiences.
So will someone from California direct it?
Yeah, so Michael Stevenson, who is the now the producing artistic director at Capital Stage, will be directing. And so looking forward to having Michael out here. We did it in reverse when we did Marjorie Prime as a co-pro last year. I directed and we started it here, and then I went out there. So it's his turn to helm the co-pro. And we look forward to having Michael in-house here. I've known him for many, many years. He's a great, great collaborator and leader and artist. And it's going to be a cool thing for American Stage.
Yeah, what a neat connection and collaboration with an entire different community.
Yeah.
And kind of creating a different sort of bond between this whole area.
It is. It is. And the artists who performed in the last co-production we did now have they've, you know, developed these deeper relationships with the other community. You know, those who came from the West Coast have deeper kind of connections here, and vice versa. And, you know, are auditioning for things out on the West Coast now. So it's really good for our artists. Another interesting thing about co-productions is recognizing kind of where audiences are the same and where they're a little different in their responses to certain things. So with this piece in particular, I'm really fascinated to know, to see how audiences respond the same or where they respond a little differently.
Yeah, that will be really fascinating to see. Yeah. And closing out our season for the 1920 season is Next to Normal, which is another musical in our
That's
space.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be the second year in a row that we're bringing a musical to our main stage. And I've been as surprised as anything about the fact that I've been really drawn to bringing musicals to our main stage. It's not really something that I'd done in the past. We do our big musical out in the park. The musicals that have kind of broken new ground in musical theater, and particularly musicals that are really potentially effective in an intimate space, like Fun Home, like Next to Normal, I found, you know, are really an opportunity to take our audiences on it, you know, just to enrich the experience that our audiences are having with us already. And Next to Normal is a rock musical. It's you know, the music is really, really cool. But the story itself is just such an American story. And it's an American story in a way that it kind of delves into territory that we didn't at one time, not so very long ago, talk about. It's essentially about mental illness. And how, you know, the whole idea of what is it to be a normal family, and seeking, you know, that trying to be a normal family when you're struggling with when you have someone in the family who's struggling with mental illness, and in this case it's the mother. So I think it's something that it's hard these days, I think, because we're more open about it, we know more about it. It's hard to have a conversation with somebody who hasn't in some way been touched by mental illness in their life, by somebody they care about or somebody in their own family. So I think that these stories need to be told, because this is an area of our experience as human beings that we need to be able to talk about, because we're all kind of, we're living it. It's real. And this musical does it in a way that, gosh, it's just really powerful. You know, asks some hard questions about kind of the pharmaceutical side of mental illness, and whether or not that's, you know, whether or not that's the answer, and what the failings of that are. And it does it in with this music that's just so full of life and so full of kind of the energy of seeking normalcy, you know, and the kind of rebellion against normalcy and all of that. So it's an exciting piece of theater. It's one of the handful of musicals that won the Pulitzer Prize for drama. And it is going to be part of our Legacy series, which is a bit of a, and kind of a new stretch for us with our Legacy series, because it's the newest piece we will have presented as part of our Legacy series. It's only a little over 10 years old, but I'm considering it part of our Legacy series because of its imprint on our art form, and because its storytelling, I think, has a universality to it that will endure.
And it's a really neat opportunity as well to do musicals in our space because of the intimacy. Mm-hmm. It really creates such a fully immersive experience into this world.
Yeah.
The director must just be so lucky to do that.
So I am directing Next to Normal, and she is lucky. I am lucky. I'm so looking forward to it. You know, I directed out at the park this past year, and that was such a great experience. I had so much fun. But I really love working in intimate spaces. So to be able to tell a musical, to direct a musical in on our main stage, where you get to bring so much more nuance and so much more character development into the work is really exciting. And then of course working with the musical director, that part of the collaboration is really great. So yeah, I'm excited to be taking on the challenge.
And it's an incredible piece of drama and writing as well. It won the Pulitzer Prize for drama,
yeah,
which is a unique award, an exciting award, especially for a musical.
Yeah, it doesn't happen very, very often. Hamilton won the Pulitzer for drama recently, but I think Next to Normal might have been previously the last one that had won. And it is a testament to its overall, again, that's why, you know, it's one of our legacy productions, because it's overall kind of staying power and the profundity of it just as a piece of art is significant. And it's going to be a really rewarding experience for our audiences and our artists.
Wow, what an incredible season. I'm so looking forward to it.
It's a lot. And I've been saying, you know, our season, The American Dreamscape, is full of motion and music and connection. And I think that feels like, as you traverse the entirety of the season, there's so much energy to it. And ultimately, each of the stories has a strong element of hope and a lot of characters facing really real challenges. And that's as American as anything I can think of. Real challenges, lots of energy, and eternal hope.
Yeah. Wow. That sounds just wonderful. So I have been so excited and have greatly admired the ways that you have crafted such bold and provocative stories to be told in this community. I'm curious, what is your vision and trajectory for how this type of storytelling can shape or change or fit in and connect with this community that we have here in St. Petersburg?
I think the thing that feels the most important, I guess for lack of a more exciting word, about the work that we do and the selections of the work that we do is providing a real sense of community. And providing a sense of community to me is about creating a space where people see each other and there's a sense of belonging. And I think that that's what live theater does in a way that's particularly special, and particularly in an intimate space, because you do feel there's a visceral relationship to the characters in the story, and it brings us kind of into a different, there's something about the lights going down and being in this dark space and then having these experiences that arouse so much feeling, and sometimes it can stay in an intellectual place, but a lot of times it's more in the gut or in the heart. And when we go to that place, that's where kind of judgment kind of starts to fall away, and we just have the opportunity to feel a little bit more seen, but also to see others in a way that maybe we haven't allowed ourselves to do. And to me, that's how you get to a sense of community and connection, which I feel that there's a lot of hunger for that right now, of just feeling connected to, as opposed to, you know, fragmented from, that's my modest goal.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for your vision for this community wonderful journey that we've been going on with you, and we're really eager to go on it again this season with An American Dreamscape.
Thank you so much, and it is a journey we're going on together, so I'm looking forward to the conversations and the collaborators, some of them we haven't even met yet.
For more information about the 1920 season at American Stage, you can visit americanstage.org/19-20. As always, we want to hear from you. Tell us which show you are most excited for in the upcoming season. You can email us at podcasts@americanstage.org or join in the conversation on our Facebook page.
Thank you for joining Spotlight, the American Stage podcast. For more American Stage programs and news, visit americanstage.org.